Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
Sometimes someone, usually mom, leaves the workplace to stay home with the kids, which then leaves her earning a lower wage for the rest of her life as a result. And that's not a choice we want Americans to make.
That's President Obama speaking Friday at Providence College in Providence, Rhode Island. Those words have been resonating since he spoke them. Did he misspeak? Did he mean to say that we don't want mothers to stay home with their kids because it's going to impact, of course, their lifelong earning potential? Even if he did misspeak, what can we learn from the aftermath of the president's recent comments made about stay-at-home moms? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Tuesday afternoon, the 4th of November. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, senior editor at The Federalist, is going to join us here for the next half hour. We're going to talk about several things, including the president's comments in Rhode Island about stay-at-home moms. We'll talk about Lena Dunham. She's the media darling and the latest kind of celebrity spokesperson endorser of Planned Parenthood, and why she makes the perfect endorser for Planned Parenthood. And we'll also talk about feminism and sexual power a little bit later. Frank Turek, founder of CrossExamine.org, will join us. We'll answer the question, is same-sex marriage a right? Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 1-877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or use our Issues Etc. comment line whenever you listen, 618-223-8382. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is a regular guest, and she is senior editor at The Federalist. Molly, welcome back to Issues Etc.
It's great to be here with you.
Speaking in Rhode Island on Friday, the president said, among other things, sometimes someone, usually mom, leaves the workplace to stay home with the kids, which leaves her earning a lower wage for the rest of her life as a result. That's not a choice we want Americans to make. Now, you've written recently about these comments from the president. You can see that he may have misspoken, but why do you suspect he didn't?
No, I actually do think that he misspoke. I think what he was trying to say was that he doesn't want mothers to have to choose between staying home and lower future wages. So that's my best construction of that, that he actually meant to say something different than what he said. But even if you accept that he meant to say something like that instead of what he actually said, I still think it's problematic. And first and foremost, I think it's problematic because that is, it's a statement that makes no sense in the real world. In the real world, people make decisions all the time where they choose one thing and that forecloses a different option. And that's how life works. That's how reality works. And that's how it will always work. And one of those things is that if you choose to be home with your children instead of being in the workforce, that affects future earnings. And of course it should, because to do otherwise would be to be insanity. I mean, it would be really weird if people would have to work the whole time and get paid the same as you who were, you know, chose to take, you know, 5, 10 or more years out of the workforce and lose all of what you accrue during that time. So first and foremost, I'd say my problem with even the revised statement is that it just exists in a fantasy realm.
Now, you speak from real life personal experience. Tell us a little bit.
Yeah, this is exactly what I did. When I had my first child, I chose to be home with her, which meant that I had to quit my newspaper job. And yes, it was a financially difficult decision to make. And it was, it involved all those trade-offs I talk about, but it worked for me. I wanted to be a mother. I wanted to be home with my child. I am a proudly maternal person, and I don't think that's a bad thing. And for me, it made sense. I had some of the best years of my life being home with my children, even though that meant that I was away from other things I liked, like newspaper jobs.
You also say that the president's argument here focuses too much on market-based metrics of success. What do you mean by that?
You know, it's something I think a lot of people across the political spectrum do here in this country. We're really obsessed with defining ourselves in terms of our paychecks. And I think that that's a very impoverished way, no pun intended, an impoverished way of looking at what life means and how to value ourselves. And so particularly when it comes to women's issues, we tend to judge women based on the size of their paycheck. And women themselves, to their credit, to our credit, make decisions based on a much more complex array of factors. Yes, we care about being paid well for our work. We also care about having flexibility. We care about being with our children. We care about things that cannot be measured in terms of, that won't be measured positively in terms of the size of our paycheck. But they do measure positively in terms of the quality of our life. And when we focus too much on, you know, wages and pay and leave out those other parts of the conversation or even make them seem bad, which is kind of the subtext of President Obama's statement and the statements of a lot of people talking about these issues, I think that's problematic. And it's something you see all across the political spectrum, but life is about a lot more than how much cash money you're bringing home. And I was raised by parents who didn't make a lot of money, but they taught me that there are all sorts of things that matter in family life other than the size of your paycheck. And I think my siblings and I all benefited from that.
Now, in that vein, you say that you reject out of hand the notion that among all the choices that a mother with small children has, the staying at home with the kids should be viewed as a negative choice. Why?
Right. I think one of the things that's problematic about the way people talk about these issues is they act like the way they're doing things is the way that everybody else should be doing things. A lot of people just straight up don't have much of an option here for financial or otherwise wish that they could stay home with their children. Fathers might wish that they could be spending more time with their children. Mothers might wish that they were completely home with their children, but they can't even have that option because of circumstances. And other people just wisely make other decisions. When you look at this vocationally, you say the job of a parent is to provide for their children. That's unquestionable. But how they do that is up to them. Yes, you do need to make prudent decisions, and it's not, you need to be wise in how you make these decisions. But that's going to be different for every single family. Some people are going to make different decisions than other people, and that's okay. But I have also noticed this trend in the way we talk about this that just implicitly or explicitly denigrates the work of being home with children by their own parents. And that's something that I want to guard against because in many ways, the natural thing is for parents to take care of their own children. It is certainly fine to outsource that care to other people as well. And that might even be a better decision in your case, but we shouldn't denigrate taking care of the children that we create.
One of the things that troubles me most, Molly, is the point that you raised first, and that is, and I think it goes into a kind of a broader way that maybe the lifestyle left wants everyone to view life, as you pointed out, that life should be able to be lived without consequences. And I'm not talking about negative consequences. I'm just talking about consequences, sex without consequences, relationship without consequences, a choice to stay home with the children without consequences. That's the fantasy realm you're talking about there. Why is that a dangerous way to think about life in general?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, because it's unsustainable to think of. I mean, whether or not you wish that there were consequences to people's actions, there always will be consequences. And again, these are positive and negative, just like you say. So just failure to acknowledge that reality means that you're living in a realm that you can't make effective policy decisions, you can't make good personal decisions. The sooner that humans come to terms with consequences for their actions, the better off we all are. And this is kind of the job of parenting, is to teach children, inculcate in them the values where they learn these things about how to make wise decisions so that they do not negatively affect those around them. And you see so much of our society, and this is not even just, you know, one side of the political spectrum or another. This is just throughout society, we seem to have completely forgotten the importance of making good decisions because they have consequences for ourselves, for the people that we love, for our near neighbors, and even for some of our faraway neighbors. And we live in relationship with other people, and we need to understand that we can positively affect society or negatively affect society by the decisions we make.
One other question along those lines. Is it, in your opinion, the government's responsibility or duty to mitigate the consequences of our life decisions?
Well, since the government always does such a good job of getting involved in people's lives and always having positive outcomes, I think, no, just kidding. Generally speaking, the nearer you are to the decision, the better and more prudent your decision will be. And the government is very ineffective at managing this process precisely for what I talked about with vocation. Everybody is going to make a different decision that meets their needs. And government solutions tend to apply a lowest common denominator solution, or they make policy prescriptions without thinking about the negative externalities or consequences of that policy. And so, again, generally speaking, it's wisest if people make decisions for themselves and they bear the consequences, both positive and negative, themselves. And then the people closest to them can provide the wisdom and guidance. This is why community institutions have been so very helping people navigate all these things about life, having children, marriage, and whatnot. And as those community institutions are now losing their importance, we're seeing just widespread failures in the family, in individual decision-making, in children being raised by their parents in terms of having both parents in the home. You know, all sorts of really deep problems are happening, and part of that is because we have outsourced the decision-making to the furthest places, you know, to Washington, D.C., instead of to our own families and our closest neighbors.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is our guest, senior editor at The Federalist. Another 10 minutes with her on the other side of the break. We'll turn to the subject of Lena Dunham. She says, the perfect celebrity endorser for Planned Parenthood. We'll find out why after this. Have you recently graduated from high school or college and are still making up your mind about your future career? Here's an opportunity to serve your neighbor through an extended, uniquely Lutheran service program. It's called the Lutheran Youth Corps. Find out more about the Lutheran Youth Corps at lcms.org/youthcorps. Life together through witness and mercy, the Lutheran Youth Corps. lcms.org/youthcorps.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
This is Pastor Tyler Arnold at Christ Lutheran in Platte Woods, Kansas City, Missouri. We are privileged to serve our Lord in word and sacrament through the historic liturgies of the church. Do join us for divine service at 8 and 10:45 and adult Bible study and Sunday school at 9:30. Each Wednesday evening we have Vespers at 7 p.m. Our address is 6700 Northwest 72nd Street, or call us at 816-741-0483. You can find us on the web at ChristLC.net. Come and be our guest at and with Christ.
Holy God, holy and most gracious Father.
Listen to chapel services live weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana at issuesetc.org. Morning Chapel from Kramer Chapel, live weekday mornings, 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific, issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, senior editor at The Federalist. Turning from the subject of President Obama's statements about stay-at-home moms to, well, this one seems more a match here. Lena Dunham is a media darling. She's a producer, a writer, creator of the HBO series Girls. She is one of kind of the new millennial feminists, I think it's safe to say. And you say, Molly, that she also makes the perfect celebrity endorser for Planned Parenthood. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting. Last week, Planned Parenthood started this big campaign built around Lena Dunham. She's a very well-regarded author, actor, director, producer in the millennial crowd, although she's not very, you know, her popularity isn't widespread outside of elite media circles. But Planned Parenthood was really pushing their alliance with Lena Dunham last week. They have a T-shirt she supposedly designed, and they were hawking that, and you know, all these tweets and social media things. Well, Lena Dunham has a new best-selling memoir out called Not That Kind of Girl, and in it she writes about how she sexually touched her younger sister, who was only a year old, and even did it throughout that girl's adolescence. How she also has spoken recently about how she outed her sister. Her sister came out to her as a lesbian when she was a senior in high school, and Lena Dunham outed her to the parents and to others. So there's just a lot of history here of Lena Dunham not really understanding boundaries, not respecting other people. She does whatever she wants sexually, doesn't care about the consequences like we're talking about. She tolerates abuse of minors. She views other human beings as nothing more than an extension of herself, she said. And she doesn't care whether her victims consent or not. So I figured she is the perfect spokesperson for Planned Parenthood, since they also suffer from these problems as the country's largest abortion provider.
Is this kind of a chicken and egg thing, the general cultural atmosphere that Planned Parenthood has, in some cases, very, very aggressively tried to cultivate, produces young feminists like Lena Dunham?
Yeah, I think that they do come from the same, you know, cultural milieu. And I think the thing about somehow we've gotten in this country this idea that whatever we do sexually is fine and nobody can tell us otherwise. And we've gotten very confused about how to apply that even when it affects other people. And it's such a chaotic moral place to be, and I don't even know how young people are even navigating this when they're told that all that really matters is telling their own story, how they feel about something, and personal autonomy and expressing yourself. Of course, nothing in life involves just yourself and no other people, and that goes particularly for when you're involved in when you're doing things sexually. And yet, that's what we like to teach ourselves and tell ourselves and delude ourselves into thinking. And so I'm not really sure which comes first, but it's a self-perpetuating spiral.
You have also written more recently about both a public relations viral campaign out of New York that is supposed to raise awareness about harassment of women on the streets, and comparing and contrasting with Ruth Orkin's famous photograph of a woman on the streets of Florence surrounded by apparently catcalling men. What have you said there, Molly?
Yes, that video that went viral about a woman who walked through New York City for over 10 hours, and then it was boiled down into sort of the worst 90 seconds of that 10-hour walk, where men are engaged in all sorts of different activities, some of which is downright reprehensible, you know, creepy and scary, like a guy just silently walking alongside this woman for minute after minute after minute. I mean, just deeply threatening and scary stuff. And then also people, men saying stuff like, hey, how are you doing? Hi, you look nice, you know, that type of thing. And what I didn't like about the public relations campaign built around that video is that it confused those two extremes. Some stuff that happens on the street might be a little uncomfortable, or it might be difficult to manage, but it's more like climaxes. There was this very famous photo taken by Ruth Orkin back in 1951 that shows this beautiful, tall American woman walking through the streets of Florence as literally a dozen or more men are checking her out. And some of them are doing so politely and respectfully, and some are definitely not. And the woman who appeared in that photo, who just happened to meet the photographer the morning before they shot this, reflected back on it. She said, you know, people think this is a symbol of harassment. They look at this video and they think this is a woman who's being harassed. And she said, this is not her experience at all. You know, when she was in Europe, walking through these streets, she felt so wonderful. She was having a wonderful time. She loved the attention she was getting. She loved how free she was. She kind of quit her job and went very cheaply through Europe and was just trying to make a go of it for 6 months or so. And she didn't feel frightened. She didn't feel upset. She just thought it was a wonderful picture that depicted sort of how beautiful life can be. And, you know, it's a very complicated issue, but I'm not sure if we've improved things by teaching women to feel victimized by male attention as opposed to empowered. Certainly men need to be taught how to be respectful on the street or in their personal interactions with women, but I'm not sure if the victimhood thing is healthy for women. I'm not sure if that makes life necessarily better for us.
Finally on that, what is kind of the feminist take, the mainstream feminist take on a woman walking down the street, whether it's for 10 hours collecting, you know, as much as she can of this kind of stuff, or just the average woman's experience, you're probably familiar with it, of being out in public, male attention. What's the feminist's way of both saying, diagnosing problem and offering a solution, and what's a better way?
Right. Well, I think it's explained well by how they term this stuff that happens on the street. They call it street harassment or catcalling. No matter if it's minor or seriously problematic. So they think that this is just a prime example of the patriarchy oppressing women and how awful men are in our current society and how women need protection, which is an interesting conversation in and of itself. But their solution has quickly shown to be that they think there should be laws prohibiting this type of interaction. And that is pretty quickly where feminists go in most things, is looking for the government to solve a problem and also shaming men away from their sort of natural interest in the female form and females in general.
Before we let you go, Molly, it's obviously Election Day. Give us your prediction on today's election. And what would it mean for President Obama and the U.S. Congress, the results of today's election?
Well, I'm a horrible prognosticator, nobody should listen to anything I say about how things are going to go, but it does look like it's going to be pretty good for the GOP, for the Republican Party, and how could it not be? I mean, the Obama presidency is just, it's going even more poorly than normal, and Americans don't seem to be terribly supportive of this president or his agenda. And I think that no matter how it goes, if it goes particularly well for Republicans or just mildly well, I think this election is mostly about President Obama's failure to live up to his presidency's promise in almost every domestic and foreign policy arena. I mean, whether you're looking at his handling of the threat of ISIS or even just basic civilized interaction of Americans on the most mundane matters. This has been a deeply problematic presidency, and I think voters will, even though you don't see as many voters in midterms as you do in presidential years, I think you'll be hearing that loud and clear from Americans.
I got to ask you about one other thing real quickly, and that is it just came across my desk. I was looking at it and kind of sent it the other direction. The president was recently at a fundraiser at Temple University. I don't know if you saw this. Could not fill, the president of the United States, at Temple, of all places, could not fill even half of their basketball auditorium with supporters or even the floor, contrasted with the standing room only welcome that he received before and then early in his presidency. What does that tell you?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it's been happening all over the country that he has barely been campaigning for Democrats, but when he does, reporters say that people are walking out as he shows up on stage. You know, he's usually the last person to speak or whatnot. And so this is clearly some serious problem that he's dealing with in terms of losing support from anybody but his most ardent base. Even in my heavily Democratic neighborhood, I've noticed that, you know, all of the Obama stickers have been stripped off the cars, and people are now in that phase that maybe you saw in previous presidencies where people just are no longer even admitting that they voted for him. So I think it just means that it's very hard to say that you supported this president, because there's not very much you can point to that has gone well. And there's certainly a lot you can point to that has gone very poorly. And now that we are through the midterms, I wonder if it's even going to get worse. But I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is senior editor at The Federalist. You can read her columns and the other columns at The Federalist at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Molly, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Special thanks to Pastor Bruce von Hindenburg and the Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Inglewood, California, for recently renewing their membership in our congregational sponsorship program that we call the Issues Etc. 300. It's a growing group of congregations that are pledging support for Issues Etc. every year in their mission or advertising budget. You can find out all the details at our website. And this is the time to approach your congregation, because right now your congregation is likely planning its budget for the coming year. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and you'll find a one-page flyer that will tell you everything you need to know about your congregation joining the Issues Etc. 300. Thank you in advance for asking your congregation to either join or renew their membership in the Issues Etc. 300. When we come back, the last half hour of the program on this Tuesday afternoon, we will spend with Frank Turek of CrossExamined.org talking about same-sex marriage as a right. We'll be right back. Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
Cradled in historic Perry County, Missouri, the manger of the Missouri Synod, Emmanuel Lutheran Church at 453 Northwest Street in Perryville proclaims God's Word and celebrates His Supper on Saturdays at 5:30 and Sundays at 7:30 and 10 using the church's liturgy contained in Lutheran Service Book, enriched with ancient and modern hymns. For more information, call 573-547-8317 or visit www.emmanuel-perryville.org.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe the law condemns everyone and should be preached to the fullest. People who believe the gospel is for everyone and should be preached to its sweetest. Traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice deliver every Sunday this law and gospel, that Christ was crucified for us sinners. To all who received him, who believed in his name, the Gospel of John says, he gave the right to become children of God. To see how Steadfast Lutherans preserves this good news for everyone, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the Issues Etc. Journal logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Bethany Lutheran College is pleased to sponsor Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio. Bethany Lutheran College is located in the picturesque river town of Mankato, Minnesota, and is committed to making Christian higher education affordable for all with generous financial aid packages available. At Bethany, you'll find stimulating academic programs, a friendly atmosphere, and opportunities to grow both in intellect and in your faith, all within the framework of a supportive Christian environment. For more information, visit us on the web at blc.edu.
The Substitute Organist Service, aptly abbreviated SOS, really has come to our rescue.
Pastor Jim Hollowatch of Christ Lutheran Church in Jackson, Mississippi.
With the ever-growing shortage of skilled musicians in our community, we were approaching a real crisis. But thanks to the Substitute Organist Service, help is always just minutes away. With its easy, intuitive interface, friendly customer service, and outstanding musicianship, you really couldn't ask for more.
You can find out more about the Substitute Organist Service at churchmusicsolutions.com.